Welcome, everyone, and thank you for standing by. At this time, I'd like to inform all participants that your lines will be in a listen-only mode for the duration of today's conference. If we have time for question and answer session, please press star one on your phones to ask a question. Today's conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. I would now like to turn the meeting over to our first speaker, Secretary of State Denise Merrill. Thank you. You may begin.
Thank you very much, and good afternoon, everyone. Thank you again for taking the time to be on this call. This is our third, and for all the feedback our office has gotten from so many of you directly and also through your state associations. In uncertain times, there are some things we do know for certain, and one is we will all do everything we can to prepare for elections. Just as importantly, we're all in this together. It's in that spirit that over the course of the last 2 weeks, my office and I have been in communication with the leadership of your associations. They're on the line again today, Sue Larson of ROVAC and Anna Pozniak of the Town Clerks Association. And they have been very direct with me about the challenges of conducting an election in this environment and the concerns that so many of you have in how we meet our shared challenge of being ready for safe and secure elections. So we have developed a shared approach. No matter what happens, we need to be prepared and rise to the challenge. We've developed a plan of action that we can all use to help guide us through these uncertain times. It is a draft. We don't have the answer to every problem, and we're hoping to continue fleshing out the details of how we're going to go about some of this. All ideas are welcome. A very important new development since our last call is the allocation of approximately $5 million from Congress that we will have available to help us assist all of you in holding an election during this very difficult time. And I know it's been said over and over again, we are in uncharted waters, but I think we have to figure this out, at least for this election, because we will have a primary, it looks like. Things can continue to change, but we have to be prepared for any eventuality. So I'm going to give you the basics of the plan. We have tried to incorporate some of the things we've heard from people. We've had lots of feedback from both the clerks and the registrars. So what's emerging are two big concerns. The first is preparing for what we think will be an increased use of absentee ballots. We know from watching across the country that during this crisis, many people are exercising their right to vote via the absentee ballot process. So to help the towns with what we anticipate will be a larger than usual volume of requests for absentee ballots, and a significant burden of the cost of mailing out applications at the local level, which is one of the big expenses that comes with all of this, my office will send absentee ballot applications to all qualified primary voters. Applications now, not the absentee ballots themselves. That's still another discussion. The application will include the constitutional language pertaining to who's eligible to vote absentee now. Our office will pay for the expense of that process. Hopefully, that will alleviate that burden on the local towns. We're also going to provide grants to localities to meet extra costs associated with processing those ballots at the local level. For example, our office has ordered a drop box for every locality that can be used to facilitate this process. So that's some of what we can do to help with what we think will be an extra burden on the town clerks in particular. I'm sure there are other parts of this, and I'm going to leave Scott Bates and Ted Bromley to sort of flesh out details of this after I speak. But that's the basic idea. When it comes to polling places, safe polls is a huge concern, and the safety of both voters and poll workers is a paramount concern for us as well. My office will share with all of you best practices used from around the country to make sure we have safe polling places. We will conduct training sessions, send information to all of you on this because there are some experiences around the country that I have, my colleagues have shared with me that I think will be useful. Additionally, my office will meet the increased costs incurred by you in terms of making sure your polling sites are sanitary and safe. We will work with you, your localities, your association, all elements of state government, to provide the materials necessary to have safe polling places. Now, I know there's great concern about the availability of safety items like sanitizers, masks, gloves. We share your concerns, but I know you have read that we have those concerns in our hospitals right now where people are dying. So although the ultimate solution rests with the towns, we are hoping that by June 2nd, the date of the primary, that perhaps there will be more availability, and we will do all we can to assist you in providing those materials. And, of course, we do have money to pay for that. I know there's also concern about having enough poll workers for Election Day. It's a very real concern and a national problem, and we've seen this coming for years now. My office will use resources at our disposal to make sure we do all we can to recruit and train new poll workers if there are gaps that start to emerge. And again, Ted Bromley can fill you in on some of the details of some of our ideas we've had around that. We also recognize that localities have to have the flexibility to close or change certain polling sites for the presidential primary. We will provide maximum flexibility under the existing law to ensure that towns who might want to move or consolidate polling places will be able to do so with some guidance from our office. In each of these areas, handling absentee ballots, ensuring safe polling places, we're working with your associations to have a joint implementation team that will meet on a daily basis to troubleshoot and work in partnership with all of you. This joint implementation team will have two representatives from each association and one from our office. As I said, we're all in this together. That's how we're going to handle this on a daily basis, working together. So what I've just discussed is our basic plan of action developed in consultation that allows us to plan for carrying out our duty and doing right by our families, friends, neighbors, and all the people of the state. These are actions within our legal authority and within our control. We are also working with the governor's office, and representatives from his office are with us on the line today to express their support of some of this planning. We can do some of these things without an executive order, some of the things I've been discussing, but questions about nominating petitions, gathering of signatures, those will require action from the governor to change. There may be other issues that can be solved by executive order that will emerge during our planning discussions. All these changes, while within the existing statutes, please be aware, this is for this primary only under very unique circumstances. We will talk later about future elections, but as we've said many times, we're trying to anticipate circumstances we've never experienced before. This is not easy. But as the governor continues to stress with the other emergencies around us, planning is key, and that's what we're doing here today. So with that, I'm going to turn this over to Doug Delena, I think it is, from the governor's office, who's with us today, to just say a few words about what they see as their role in this, and then we'll get greetings from Anna and Sue. So, Doug, are you on the line?
Yes, thank you, Secretary. And for those who don't know me, I'm Doug Delena. I'm the governor's deputy general counsel. And I just want to basically endorse everything that the secretary has just said, is that this is a unique situation. This is being developed as we speak, and as the days go by, the plans are being refined. So I want to talk about kind of the governor's guidance that he's given to us and his goals and what we see as our shared goal, and then I think you could hear that that is the shared goal from the things the secretary just said. Number one is to protect public health and safety. Number two is to ensure that every eligible voter has the opportunity to exercise their fundamental right to vote. And number three is to make sure that they can do that in a safe and secure way that maintains confidence in the electoral system. And so our job in the governor's office and the direction he has given to us is to make sure that we provide the legal authority and the resources that you all need to carry that out. And that's what we're working with the secretary on. So she mentioned, you know, the resources that are going that are coming from the federal government. We also have resources at our disposal, or at least the ability to expedite certain things or help get certain kind of protective equipment. And we'll be working with the Secretary's office on that kind of stuff. But I do want to also talk about the legal authority issue. The Secretary already can do a lot of the things that are in her plan. Where she finds gaps, or you are able to help her find gaps, I think the framework that we have used throughout this emergency is important for you to know. And it's that given the powers that the governor has under this emergency, if there is something that can help solve this problem and help achieve those goals of protecting the public health, ensuring every eligible voter can exercise their right to vote safely, and maintaining confidence in the system, if there's something that can be done that's a good idea that would work, but there's a regulation or a statute that prevents it, we have the power, the governor has the power, to act on the Secretary's recommendations to make a modification to that to make things work smoothly and make your jobs easier and safer. And so that's the kind of work that we're doing to help the Secretary put into place her plans informed by your input. On that note, the Secretary had mentioned things about absentee ballots. And so I want to tell you about our discussions with the Secretary's office. On that note, the governor has authorized us to look every which way at the law around absentee ballots in light of what does it mean to be sick during a pandemic when the public health guidance has been that everyone has to assume that they're sick to avoid transmitting it to anyone else. And so what the Secretary said about we don't have all the answers for you today, but we are very closely looking at what is the opportunity to maximize the use of absentee ballots so that we can decompress the number and the density of people at the polling places. I think that's all I want to say. I think I've covered the bases about our philosophy and the work we're doing to bring this to fruition. And I'll just turn it back over to the Secretary and say thanks again.
Thank you so much, Doug, and thank you for all the time you have spent with us on this. I know it's a really difficult question, and it raises lots of other difficult questions, but you've been really a trooper, and I know you've got a lot on your plate right now. So thank you for your attention to this.
Thank you.
Okay, now I'll turn this over to Sue Larson. Sue on the line.
Unless she dropped off, check your mute button, Sue. Yeah. Let me check in one moment.
You know what? Then we'll go to you, Anna, since you seem to be there and unmuted.
Thank you for
good
afternoon. Thank you very much for giving us the opportunity to speak today. We as town clerks, we know we have to issue absentee ballots for the primary, and we know there's no way around it. Town clerks have been known for never turning away a resident that is in need of help. We are resourceful, proficient, and adaptable. Whenever we make a commitment, we implement resourceful measures to make sure those goals are met for our commitment. And we are actively working with the Secretary of the State's office to be certain that CVRS will be up and running and the plan that they have outlined will come to fruition and work for us successfully. I believe if the plan works as outlined, we can accomplish our goal. It won't be easy, but we will get it done. I ask the town clerks to please be optimistic, stay calm, and plan ahead. We have a strong network that we can lean on during this challenging time. And we do have some concerns with the implementation of their improvements to CVRS to make the process more proficient for us. As a result, I appointed a deputy town clerk to work with the Secretary of the State's office and the printer to ensure that the modifications to CVRS are made in time of the May 12th issuance. I also have received a promise from the Secretary of State's office that all town clerks that are not presently on CBRS will be up and running by May 12th. We are also asking the governor to 24-hour deadline where we are required to act on absentee ballot applications and mail out a ballot to the voter. We are working with fewer staff members, and we're processing an unprecedented amount of absentee ballots. We're estimating that we'll probably be issuing 2/3 of all those who vote in the upcoming primary an absentee ballot. And town clerks and the registrars need the state to assist us with buying supplies, the necessary supplies to keep our staff and our election workers safe, and that's gloves, masks, hand sanitizer, cleaning products. Our towns are struggling to find these supplies, and we need your help. Thank you very much for the opportunity to speak.
Okay, thank you very much, Anna, and thank you for your partnership on this. And we're going to, like I say, no idea is unwelcome. Everyone should let us know what they need and work through Anna and your associations to make that happen. So, Sue, are you on the line now?
Hopefully I am. I'd like Okay. Well, anyway, just to add to a little bit to what Anna said, I'm sure the registrars are working together right now to ensure that our polling places will be safe. We've been talking about different ideas with the board, giving them straight over to the Secretary of the State's office to incorporate into the plan. One of the things I'd really like to mention is the working relationship that we're going to need between the registrar's office and the town clerk's office. Because of the high volume, the town clerks are going to need some assistance, and that means people, registrars, deputies, anyone in your offices that are familiar with CVRS, to offer your help to get us through this. I'm sure the poll numbers are not going to be as high as they normally are, but absentee ballots will be. So any help that we can give the town clerks will be greatly appreciated. We're doers. We can do this. We can help them and still maintain getting our poll workers, putting our polling locations together, doing the training, everything else that's going to be involved in putting this primary together. I'm really confident about how this whole plan is coming together. The Secretary of the State's office has taken all of our ideas. Some they've agreed with, some they haven't, but some of these, the really important ideas are being incorporated into their plan. And as I said yesterday in the email to everybody, this is a work in process. Be patient. We're going to get you the plan as soon as it's in a format that I think we can all work with, and that should be relatively shortly. And I'm sure that Deputy Secretary Bates and Ted Bromley will be explaining more later on. So thank you, all of you, for working so hard and staying on top of everything that needs to be done at this point in time.
Okay, thank you, Sue, so much. And thank both of you for your partnership and the can-do attitude. I love it. That's what we need to get us through this. Okay, with that, I'll turn this over maybe to Scott and Ted to sort of fill in the blanks if there's anything I missed, and maybe flesh out some of the details that we do know at this point. So I don't know which of you wants to go first, but go ahead.
Sure. Yeah, I'll just take a moment, Madam Secretary. This is Scott Bates, Deputy Secretary of the State, and honored to be so at this time in particular because I've seen and I stand in admiration of the people that are on this call today. First, the men and women of the governor's office who are, and I'm on calls every day where I'm hearing, representing our agency, but hearing the work that is going on in dozens of agencies across the state, literally saving lives. And so that is how important the governor's people feel that the work that you're doing is. They're on this call today, and they've been putting a lot of time and effort into making sure that the people of Connecticut have faith in their democratic institutions and know that, you know, when everything else can look a little shaky in our society, when it's uncharted territory, that the core of who we are, which is our democracy, is moving forward. Republican, Democrat, unaffiliated, doesn't matter. So, Ted has put a lot of work into this, along with Sue, Anna, and everybody else on this call. So Ted can get into some of the particulars, but I think the Secretary sketched out a lot of the core of what we're looking at. And Ted will certainly field your questions and those of us that are on here as well. Finally, if I could once again just say, even though this seems like an overwhelming moment, I hope everyone takes heart in knowing that literally everybody on this call is in it together. We will rise and meet this challenge together. And, years from now, I know everybody on this call is going to be so proud of all the actions we took working together. So thank you. And Ted Bromley.
Okay, thank you very much. So hello, everybody. Good afternoon. I just want to echo very, very briefly that thank you for the governor's office being on here. I've worked with Doug and Jonathan and Bob for a little bit on different projects, and they're all upstanding guys. And thank you for your efforts there. And the secretary as well, I've been on constant contact with her probably 2, 3, 4 times a day sometimes. And so if any of you doubt her resolution to this matter, or her resolve to this matter, then you can just put that at rest. So the secretary outlined a little bit for you our plan, and I know that that Sue has outlined a little bit of it, and so you got bits and pieces of it. But I'm just going to highlight a few things, and then we're going to go right into questions. So as the governor's office said, we are in constant communication with them working on absentee ballot solutions and issues. And either way that turns out, we do anticipate that there's going to be a greater pool of people that are voting by absentee ballot. So to that extent, the plan not only seeks to help you out with the applications, but at some juncture will help you out with the balloting as well. But again, that has to be developed, and so that's all I'll say about that. Anna did talk about centralized voter reg, and currently I've just hung up the phone with Steve Mason, and I know he's already been in contact with a few of those 19 towns that don't have access to CVRS. So if you've not been contacted by him personally, you will be in the very near future. The other things that we are talking about are polling places and supplies, and the secretary again said that there's going to be a team of us working to see if we can procure those supplies for you to make sure that individuals are safe at the polling place, and little things that I think are brilliant in terms of what the governor's office already has done with, like, supermarkets in terms of one-way aisles and, the restriction on people that are in supermarkets. I think those are things that we're gonna feed off of as we roll into polling places. I think those are great models. I think it was perfectly done, and I think it keeps people safe. So those of you that have been grocery shopping, sort of imagine that translating into your polling place, and I think you'll get an idea of where that is coming. Reduction of polling places. Sue had spoken about that, and she is absolutely right. We're working with her on that in terms of how we go about consolidating those to the extent that it makes sense in each one of the towns. So we'll be continually working on that. Supervised balloting effectively has been eliminated already by the governor's executive orders that say that, people can't go into the nursing homes anyways. So those individuals will be voting by a regular absentee ballot. And so that's sort of the 30 or 40 or 50,000 feet idea of the plan. So we're thinking about all those things. We are working with your elected representatives from your agents, your associations, and we are sharing with them, and it's a give and take relationship. I think thus far it's been great. And as everybody said so far, no idea is stupid. We should consider every idea. And the last thing I'll say is that I think, this is uncharted territory for everybody when it comes to this. Secretary Merrill's been through blizzards from hurricanes, but this is certainly uncharted territory, and I don't think we should be afraid to think outside the box. Connecticut is one of those land of steady habits where we get nervous when we make small changes. And I think as election officials, we need to not be afraid of that and try to keep our eyes on what's really important here, which is to be able to allow our citizens the opportunity to vote. And so I think as we move forward, you know, maybe at the end of this, we'll come out with some brilliant ideas that will be workable even with regular elections. You never know. But with that, I think it's time that we should open up to questions that you may have. I will try to address them, and whoever else is dialed in as a leader, if you have something to say as well, just chime in. That would be great. So if we could just open up for questions, that would be great. Thank you.
We'll now begin our formal question and answer session. If you would like to ask your question, please unmute your phone, press star 1. Only record your first and last name. To withdraw your question, you may press star 2. Once again, to ask your question, please press star 1, and one moment for the first question. The first question is coming from Betsy. Your line is open.
Hi. Thanks for this great call. I'm just very curious about the no excuses for a ballot because it's a constitutional law. There's no precedence for the governor on any circumstance to overturn constitutional law. It takes the legislature, but I believe this would actually have to be a question to the voters. And saying that also, a presidential preference primary is not really is not the action of the state. We've just decided to do that. That's the law that we should be concentrating on and put it back into the party's responsibility like other states have done and let them deal with choosing their presidential candidate instead of putting the burden on taxpayers. So those are two things that you can talk about.
The law is what it is right now. So I think that we have to administer it as best we can. And in terms of the constitutionality of absentee ballots, that is precisely what we are working with the governor's office on to make sure that whatever decision is made is going to be not only safe for the voters, but also in the best interest of the state. So.
But this is a party issue, not really a state issue. Presidential preference primary is for parties to choose their candidates. It's just that the legislature decided that we would do this. It's a legislative act, which could easily be suspended under the governor's act right now. And you could just bounce this right back to the parties instead of having a constitutional change.
Right. No, we understand. I'm not sure I have a solution for that right now, but thank you.
So this is Doug DeLena from the governor's office. I'll just say that whatever decision that we make in concert with the secretary's office, we will have consulted with the Office of the Attorney General and the leadership of the legislature, and we will do whatever we do consistent with the requirements of the state constitution and the federal constitution.
Oh, that's heartening.
And the next question is coming from
Hello?
David Smith. Your line is open.
Hello there, everyone. Listen, we appreciate the working together that has been indicated all along and always is, and we do appreciate that. I know I speak for everybody in pulling that all together. I'm just wondering when the last date for the cancellation of the primary can be if Rocky steps down or Bernie steps down, and then there were two. What is the last date that can happen so that the whole thing is a moot point? And we are certainly looking forward to all the state help and the added monies that have been trickled to us by Washington to assist us in pulling off the primaries, to be sure. So whatever you can do in that regard would be helpful. Oh, and how will anybody know whether they are eligible to render an absentee ballot?
Okay, so two very good questions, David. Thank you for the question. So the first is that the withdrawal deadline right now, because the June 2nd primary was moved back, is at the end of April. So we have pretty much a month with which to operate in terms of whether or not any candidates withdraw. And you're correct that if for some reason Rocky decides to withdraw and it leaves only President Trump, or if Sanders or Biden decide to withdraw and it leaves only one of them, then by statute the primary can be stopped at that point. And the second one is dependent upon the resolution of the absentee ballot issue, and depending upon what comes down in terms of any type of executive order or change, that certainly the eligibility will certainly be spelled out to with any type of information that is sent to the voters. So we will make sure that they understand what the eligibility or what their eligibility or opportunity is to use that by putting that information out to them.
Thank you.
Sure. Next question.
The next question is coming from Lisa Santangelo. Your line is open.
Thank you so much for these calls. They're sorely needed, and we appreciate your guidance. Two questions with the supervised voting absentees. We have 9 facilities that we normally service. I understand that the absentees will be going out to the facilities, but we've impressed upon the facility employees that they don't handle the absentee ballots. The question that's coming back to us now is, when the absentee ballot comes to the facility and they give it to the resident and the resident asks for assistance, are they permitted to provide that assistance? And they're looking for some kind of documentation spelling out what their role is given this change in the process. The other question that I had was about the format, how I'm going to be reaching out to the Board of Education and to the other hosts for our polling places. How should we ask them what it is they need and what is the format or process that we would be conveying these requests to your office? That's it. Thank you.
Okay. So the first question about the supervised absentee balloting. So under current law, anybody that's voting by absentee ballot can ask anybody of their choosing to assist them with the absentee balloting. So to the extent that we are sending absentee ballots to individuals at nursing homes, just like if your designees were going to be there during the supervised, they can ask anybody of their choosing to assist them with that ballot. In terms of, I'm assuming, Lisa, if you're still there, I'm assuming it was supplies. You were talking about the Board of Ed, so I wasn't sure where that was.
We have 9 places. We have the Board of Education. We have a fire department, and then we have a building at Wesleyan. If we are going to be bringing in the cleaning supplies or whatever supplies we have, how do we coordinate that, or should we coordinate it with the facility that is hosting us? And then how do we submit our request for these supplies and materials to your office?
Oh, okay. Thanks. Thanks for the clarification. So when we get down to it, when we get down to modeling the polling place, and again, I urge you, if you've gone grocery shopping, to sort of think of the supermarket and the ingenuity that the governor's office has had with them and sort of translate that into a polling place. I think it's a great example. So if you think a lot of those changes, much of that stuff, much of those supplies are going to be at the disposal of the registrars and the town clerks. So to the extent that we are talking about, cleaning supplies or hand sanitizer or maybe some type of portable glass or plexiglass barrier that your checkers can sit behind or something. All of that stuff would just be a part of your election equipment. I don't envision it to be permanent structures within a gym or something of that nature. So that being said, I think it would just be part of your normal polling place setup. But in terms of how you request those, that's exactly what the secretary was talking about in terms of putting this this team of individuals together that are going to work together to sort of attempt to procure those supplies and then come out with the recommendations of what the best products are for a polling place. Because, of course, no vendor – well, there's – I take that back. There are a couple of vendors, but no heavy-duty vendor produces things particularly for polling places. So we just have to sort of take what we can get in this time of crisis and see if we can use it in a voting environment.
Thank you.
Sure. Next question.
And the next question is coming from Don Iser. Your line is open.
Thank you. My question is, with the increase in absentee ballots and most likely diminished staff, can we start processing absentee ballots prior to primary day? Thank you.
That is a fantastic question, and that is definitely one of the ideas that we are percolating around here in terms of extra time to process those things. And, in fact, I've already reached out to the University of Connecticut to have them start working on the voting tabulator to see how it would behave and react to multiple days of running absentee ballots through it. So yes, that is an idea in the hopper and an idea that we are investigating. So thanks for the question.
Thank you.
The next question is coming from Lucy Corelli. Your line
yep.
is open.
Hi, Ted. Hello, everyone. Good afternoon. Ted, we decided that even though it's going to be a small turnout, we still have 22 districts that we have to fill in and do them, and we decided to have police officers. That's the only way we could be sure that people do not, they stay to 6 feet or whatever it is. And right now, total, we have over 71,000 registered voters. Minus the unaffiliated, we still have 59,000. I'm assuming even with the ABs, we're still going to be about 30 to 32,000 people coming out to vote because it is a primary, and every time it's a presidential, either primary or an election, people seem to come out more. So my question is, we're going to do the police officers. That's what we decided our office to do. Now, Ted, will the Secretary of State office will pay for that or not? It comes from our own budget.
You sneaky devil, you. I knew that question. I knew you were going to get around to that, right? So I think that what we'll do, and Deputy, if you're on there, if you want to chime in on this one, I think what we'll do is any expense related to carrying out this election to the COVID, we will consider. I mean, certainly if you're going to outlay an expense of that amount for police, that we would probably want to talk about it ahead of time.
Right.
So I'm certainly not going to say no at this point. And let's just as the plan develops, as we get into developing the polling place procedures, we can certainly take that into consideration, Lucy.
That's exactly the kind of question that we'll tackle in the joint implementation team. But I think we'll develop a formula ultimately that will make sure that every municipality is getting some financial support. And ideally and hopefully, if we do it right, everybody will have the expenses paid for that are COVID-related. So I think you can be assured that that will happen, but we'll all talk about in advance with you like what those expenses might be.
Okay.
So
and the other question is, Ted, we have 14 schools that we use for our elections. Now, could the Board of Ed deny us access to those schools?
That is a great question, and that is something that, you know, something that we're investigating right now, and ultimately we may need the assistance of the governor on that as well, in terms of if children are no longer at the schools, like to the extent that, you know, they don't go back to school or whatever, and I know that, please don't take that, because I know the governor hasn't made a decision on that.
Right.
So I don't want angry parents calling me. But to the extent that the kids aren't in school, certainly, and if we have the funds to, you know, clean that polling place after the use, that's something that we'll be looking into. So that's a great question. It's one that is on our radar, certainly.
Okay. Ted, if you don't mind, this is Selena. I'll just add to that.
Please.
If I can just tell you right now, if the schools are open and classes are resumed by the time of the primary,
right,
it's our intent to issue an order that cancels classes on that day.
Okay.
So that we remove that additional complication and risk, but can still keep the buildings available.
Okay. Thank you so much for your answers.
Thanks, Doug. That's great. The one thing that I do want before we go to the next question is that I know that there's a lot of questions. We've had a lot of conversations with Sue and other people about the consolidation of polling places and things of that nature. And what I would encourage you to do as you're thinking about this is just hop online today, because we have a prime example of the potential with Wisconsin today. I was just reading just before I hopped on here that the city of Milwaukee closed all but five of their polling places. And you get a perfect example of why that's not a good idea, because now they have thousands of people standing in line together waiting to get into the polling place. And I think it's an interesting sort of view or vision of, you know, we talk on these conference calls about, oh, well, there's going to be a lot of people voting by absentee ballot. And I think that that's true. But I was surprised to read the reports of how many people actually voted or are voting or looking to vote in person in Wisconsin today. So if you just hop online and just take a look at that, I think that would be eye-opening, because it certainly was for me. Okay, next question.
The next question is coming from Jim Pape. Your line is open.
Thank you. And Ted, thank you for you and the Secretary of State, all your office, for all your help. My first question was answered on police protection for our workers and voters. But my second question is, I'm in charge of getting all of our poll workers. I'm already getting many calls from people saying that always work, that they do not want to work, and they are all very elderly. So that is my that's going to, I think, be a concern of getting enough workers.
Hey, Ted, if I could take this. It's Scott Bates.
Please,
I know the Secretary has been in touch with colleagues around the country about the recruitment efforts that they're putting into play. We have resources to help actually get the word out that we need people to step up and be poll workers. So this is an opportunity. We hear what you're saying. It's an opportunity to get a new generation of folks that are able to step up and know that, you know, we need them in this time. And so there are special programs designed to try to recruit folks. We just funnel them to you. You'd ultimately make the hires, but we're here to help you find people, and we're going to work under the assumption that that's going to be a need that everybody's going to have.
Thank you very much.
You bet.
The next question is coming from Chad Miller. Your line is open.
Hi, Chad Miller, Wallingford. Some of the things that I have already done I ordered food handler gloves from a vendor, so I'm going to be handing those out to a pair of those to each voter that comes into the poll. My problem is getting wipes that are going to be disinfectant and enough surgical gloves and masks for my poll workers. That's number one, if you know where we can get those. The second question, and it was just as Ted, I couldn't agree with you more. Normally, under normal circumstances, I would say we should reduce the number for primaries, the number of polling places. But under this situation, I think that's absolute folly. And unless I am ordered to do that, I would not do it in my town.
Okay. Thanks, Chet. So that's one of our main goals of getting these groups together is to search out and find, as you did, Chet, various other alternative avenues to find some of these protective devices. Like you did, you found food service gloves as opposed to surgical gloves. And so, you know, those types of non-mainstream differentiations may assist as well. And I think one of the other things that we were looking into at the office is to see if we could procure or bother one of the huge pen companies that reside in Connecticut to see if perhaps we could procure pens so that there's no reuse of pens. And I don't know how successful we've been on that, but I know those we're trying to be creative in every avenue of this thing so that we reduce the risk of the cross contamination. So.
Well, that was one of my reasons for getting the gloves for the voter to have a pair of gloves that they could wear all the time that they're in there, so they could handle that pen and handle their ballot without contamination.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, that's good thinking outside the box. I like that.
Thank you.
So next question. Let's try to squeeze a few more in before our deadline here.
The next question is coming from Lois. Your line is open.
Thank you. First of all, I do concur with my colleagues that you've got the right people in the room to represent those of us on the ground, and I appreciate that. My question has it pertains to both pieces that Secretary Merrill described. One is the AB decisions. Each day we are getting requests now, am I allowed to use absentee voting? I'm wondering what your timeline is for determining that. And my second part of my question has to do with the merger of these polling locations. At what stage do you anticipate a decision for that? Would that be after we receive some of those absentees back, or we have an idea of how many folks are voting absentee?
Let me just, on the timeline,
go ahead. Yep.
This is Doug DeLena from the governor's office. Within days, we expect to be announcing a decision on that with the secretary.
Perfect. Okay.
And in terms of, so piggybacking off of that with Doug, so as soon as we're able to work with the governor to get that and also to get that, we'll have a firmer timeline in order. But also, we know that that if you are consolidating polling places, one of the biggest things is the ability for you to notify those voters that are affected of where to go. And so, so consolidation of polling places is sort of one of the things that, as this plan comes together, will be one of the first things that we address. And again, we intend this to be a very measured and thought out way to do it, working with ROVAC leadership, because again, looking at Milwaukee as an example, that is not what we want to happen in Connecticut. So.
Right. A quick follow up on that, though.
Yes.
In terms of that,
yes, sure.
Will you handle individual towns? But, we take into account the circumstances involving individual towns and cities in Connecticut, or is there going to be a blanket order, yes or no?
Oh, no. I think we started out with maybe just this sort of blanket idea, and we found out quickly from your ROVAC leadership that one size fits all, as usual in Connecticut, doesn't work all that well. So I think we'll be getting down into the weeds as we work on this in terms of looking at individualized solutions.
Perfect. Thank you.
Next question.
The next question is coming from Janelle. Your line is open.
You mean Giselle?
Giselle, yes, thank you.
Hi, everyone. Hope everyone's staying safe. Ted, can you just real quickly, the mailing of the AB applications, how is, just review that one more time. Am I understanding that you're going to do the regular use through the CVRS for the prime voters, or is it going to be everyone that's party affiliated? And then my other question is, but I think it's a, how soon will we know about supplies and when it will be able to be ordered by individual towns? And does it vary as far as supplies go of how many polling places each town has?
Okay, so in terms of the supplies, we'd be looking to procure massive quantities of those, and we would certainly have to break those supply distribution down into the various towns in terms of the numbers of polling places that they have. So that certainly will be a consideration. The first question there was about the absentee ballot applications. To the extent
right.
that we're moving ahead with that, what we would do is we would provide the print house vendor with a list of the active Republicans and Democrats in the state, and that would be their targeted audience.
Just the active voters?
Active.
So,
active, yeah.
Okay. And then, so my question will be, as far as all the nursing homes and other facilities that we take care of, otherwise as supervised ballots for the absentee purposes, should we take it upon ourselves to go ahead and mail out those applications? Because not all of them are permanent within the facilities.
Right. So to the extent that they have either an address or a mailing address on the system, that's where that application is going to go.
But do we do the nursing homes on our own, or are you going to do that with your facility that you're going to hire? I guess that's the question.
Right. So our intent is to cover all of those with the mail house, and that's why I was saying if they have a mailing address of, you know, if they live in Vernon, but they have a mailing address of somewhere in Manchester because that's where they are for a convalescent home, then that's where the application will go.
Okay. And do you have an idea of when that's going to happen?
Those are details that we're working out right now as we speak. I was just working on some of that stuff this morning. So it's constantly moving. But we know we have to do it sooner rather than later.
Okay, and then my other quick question, because it's going to be an abundance of ABs from the monies that are coming in, besides the sanitation supplies and so forth, that will also equal out to be monies for us hiring extra bodies to deal with these ABs?
Yes, that is absolutely the intent, yes.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, so I think we'll do one more question because I know that these conference lines are very, very valuable to other state agencies. So let's do one more question, please, and then we'll just sign off.
The last question is coming from Donna LaPlante. Your line is open.
Thank you. Hi, Ted. I have a question about the mailing of the absentee application. A fairly small percentage of our voters are familiar with the absentee process, and in the past, when absentee applications have been mailed out by candidate committees, whatever, my office has received a lot of calls from people who are very confused about why did I get this and what do I do with it. I'm hoping that you'll be including with that application a cover letter that it really goes into a lot of detail about the fact that this is an opportunity for the voter to have another way to exercise their right to vote, and also details the process a little bit, just to avoid the confusion and eliminate a lot of calls to our offices, to the town clerk's offices, about what do I do with this? Thank you.
Yep. So that's a great question and a great point to end with, is that I think that a lot oftentimes, including me, we get caught up in the certain actual focus on a certain aspect of the plan. So the plan itself indeed has the mailing out of an application, and we certainly do anticipate providing detailed instructions or an explanation as to why individuals are getting that. But the plan is also part of an even grander scheme of outreach and education to not only to registrars and town clerks, but also to the voters themselves about what is happening during this crisis, this pandemic, what the situations are, and how they can vote safely. So there is a whole nother side of this plan that is being handled by our communications people that deal with the touching the voter and using the media and using all kinds of other things, social media and the like, to ensure that the public remains educated on what is happening. That being said, if the governor's office or Denise or Scott, if you're still on the line with us, if you want to say a closing remark, that's fine. But otherwise, I think we can sign off at this point. And I thank everybody for their cooperation and open-mindedness at this point.
Okay, thank you, Ted. Go ahead.
No. Thank you, everyone. And I'm sure Secretary Merrill has said she'd like to have this kind of call continue in the weeks ahead. And just a reminder that there will be a joint implementation team that will be working on a daily basis, and it'll be fielding these kinds of questions and working with everyone to work out answers.
Yes, indeed. I think it's good to have this kind of a call where people personally, you know, have an opportunity to ask questions and come up with ideas. But from now on, you know, we will also have this other layer of things going on. I hear a lot of, I think what I'm thinking is that we're going to need plans in a way from any town that wants to take advantage of any of this. Much like we do emergency plans already, this sounds almost like another piece of an emergency plan. And so that's probably what we'll need from you, and we'll be able to process at our level. But I'm expecting that the communication, stay in touch with your associations. I think that communication is very important. So if you have ideas, ferry them to Sue and Anna and their boards, and we'll work with them to make them happen as much as we can. So I want to thank all of you for tuning in today and staying informed on what's going on. As you can tell, there's a lot of thought going into this. And like I say, planning is key. This is a tough one to plan for because we don't know exactly what to expect. But I think we're on a good path, and we'll get it done. So thank you very much. Doug, I don't know if you want to say a few last words from the governor's office.
Sure. Thank you, Secretary. I will just add that the primary schedule for June 2nd, it is April 7th. And so I think it's very important to remember today and in the coming hours and near-term days that we have some time to work all this out, and this stuff's all going to be worked out. And all the questions that are not answered today, we're going to be able to answer them in time for you guys to prepare and get the resources and people in place that you need to do.
Great. Okay, thanks, everyone. I think we'll sign off. Thanks for your attention, and we'll have another one of these calls probably next week. And meanwhile, this team will be feverishly working to try to get us on track. So thanks to everyone.
This will conclude today's conference. All parties may disconnect at this time.